Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on 990 WDEO.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
We're American, greatest country on the planet.
America is already gone. We have seen the globalist preparations.
You can't save America if you won't build the church.
I heartily agree with you, sir.
I have a plan that cannot fail.
Pepper. Build the church, bless the nation.
Let's put it to a vote.
The kingdom of God is not a democracy.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
I relish every moment I have to listen to you now.
I like you already.
My favorite program to be on.
That's such a great question. I'm so glad somebody's asking this.
That's an extremely insightful question, Al.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Good luck for both of our sakes.
Here we go.
Very good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. We've got another 2 hours talking about the things that matter most, and we have got a packed program today. Do you remember the conversation from just a few weeks ago regarding Brittany Maynard? Brittany was a 29-year-old who, well, ended her own life on her own schedule. She was diagnosed earlier in 2014 with a fatal brain tumor. She was told that the cancer likely would kill her in 6 months, but she had no intention, she said, of allowing the disease to control how she lived or how she died. And so she had planned since the spring, to do this bucket list thing. And she did have, according to the reports, she did struggle with seizures and excruciating headaches. She finally drank a lethal mixture of water and sedatives and respiratory sensitive depressants. She killed herself, and it was called death with dignity. When I heard that, that she was planning to do it, and that she was insisting on doing it on her own time schedule, when somebody's willing to insist on maintaining that degree of control, it really tells me that person wants to live. Not that they want to die, but that they want to live. They want to control things. They want to order things. They want to assert their own well-being over these hostile forces of death. And so I was sympathetic with her, and I just think it's terrible that she ended up having to accomplish her own death. Now, all of us will face death, and none of us know exactly what it's going to be. The scriptures tell us that death is the last enemy. It also tells us that death keeps people in fear all their lives. So there's no reason to pretend that this is not a matter of concern. How we will die, that we will die. We're going to talk with a woman today who's a mother of four. She's living with an inoperable kidney cancer. She has a little blog called A Little Thing Called Hope. And we're going to talk to Liz Lovett about how she's dealing with incurable cancer as a mother, as a wife. And we'll talk a little bit about her short video, Death with Dignity. That's coming up today. Also, as we approach the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, people are wondering what can they do to keep their commitment to protect the unborn. Lynn Mills joins me. Lynn's a longtime pro-life activist, and she's worked with many different organizations. I always like to stress, and a listener pointed this out the other day, oftentimes we don't always stress how many spokes there are on the pro-life wheel. Right to Life of Michigan, for instance, has been at work doing tremendous stuff over the years. Very faithful organization. There have been people who do direct action at clinics. We have Dr. Monica Miller here with us. And I've asked Lynn Mills to join me today to talk about what she's been doing and basically how to shut down an abortion clinic. So she joins us today. Raymond Ibrahim will be with us. What ideology unites ISIS and Boko Haram and Al-Qaeda and Hamas? I want you to hear from somebody whose life is spent studying and working with these groups, what unites them. And then we're going to look at the best films of 2014 with Stephen Granados. But before we go anywhere, let me remind you, I'll be at St. Patrick's in Brighton tonight speaking, but it's the news right now with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, January 14th. It is the Feast of St. Felix, and today's news is sponsored in part by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. ISIS is praising last week's Paris terror attack in a video released today. In the video, members of the Islamist militant group encourage more violence in the U.S. and Europe. The men threatened to extend ISIS's territory into Europe, killing more police officers and so-called infidels in the streets. Earlier today, Al-Qaeda took responsibility for planning and financing the attack. 10 people are dead after a prison transport bus crashed into a train this morning just outside of Odessa, Texas. Jason Clark, spokesperson for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, describes the accident.
Preliminary information is that the vehicle left the roadway on Interstate 20 and collided with a train. Two correctional officers and 8 offenders tragically have died from the injuries they sustained in the accident.
Clark added that 4 inmates and a staff member are in the hospital. The bus was taking inmates from Abilene to El Paso when the accident happened near the town of Penwell. The cause of the crash is under investigation. Iranian nuclear talks are set to resume in Geneva.
This administration's policy has led to a place where Iran's nuclear program is frozen for the first time in a decade. The diplomacy we've put in place has led to that happening and that outcome.
That is State Department spokesperson Marie Harf, who says Secretary of State John Kerry has been working with the U.S. negotiating team on pushing Iran to curb its nuclear program. Iran wants to end international sanctions and continues to insist that its nuclear pursuits are for peaceful purposes. Other nations involved in the talks include Germany, Britain, Russia, France, and China. And a San Francisco man is joining 11 others in an attempt to run 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 different continents. Tim Durbin is the only American taking part in the World Marathon Challenge, which kicks off on Saturday at Union Glacier in Antarctica. He'll then run marathons on successive days in Chile, Miami, Madrid, Morocco, and Dubai before concluding his week of marathon running in Sydney, Australia. He is raising money for the V Foundation for Cancer Research and hopes to bring in $77,777. And now your fascinating fact for the day. A blue whale's tongue weighs more than the average elephant. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, I feel like I swallowed an elephant. You ever hear that phrase? You've never heard that phrase. No, I might have just made it up. Anyways, I had to say something about a blue whale's tongue being weighing more than an elephant. Good heavens. Well, as I mentioned during the intro, last year we saw the tragic story of Brittany Maynard, who ended her life proudly on her own schedule. She was diagnosed early in the year with a fatal brain tumor. She had been planning since the spring to basically do her bucket list thing and then eventually take her life on her own choosing. She was only 29 years old. Most people saw it as a tragedy. What impressed me about it is that she wanted to do this so badly that it really telegraphed to me that she wanted to live, because that is a positive impulse, the impulse to, organize your life, to order your life. That's the sign of somebody who, wants to live. But there are other ways of dealing with physical deterioration, demise, and even terminal illness, where you still retain the desire to live, but instead of destroying yourself, You learn how to flourish in the midst of suffering. Joining me right now is Liz Lovett. She's the mother of four that we've discussed on this program before. She's living with an inoperable kidney cancer. She's created a blog called A Little Thing Called Hope. She has really became familiar with Liz through a video that I saw, and I thought I'd love to talk with her about it. So I asked if she'd join us today, and she has. Liz, good to have you with me.
Thank you so much, Al. Thank you.
Well, let me ask, when did you decide that this was something you wanted to deal with publicly?
Well, to be honest, Chris Tasanic, who's a dear friend of ours over at Real Life Catholic, makes inspirational videos like these.
Yes.
And he profoundly believes in the beauty and truth and power of the gospel. And, you know, when of my diagnosis, and he would visit us regularly throughout the year, and he saw how Ryan and I were just living, how we were just going on about life, and he said that he just loved how we were living our life in the face of death, you know, and he asked very delicately if I could do a video with him, because that's what he does, and I, of course, said yes, if I can express my love for God because of my particular circumstances of what's going on with me, I would love to help in any way.
Sure. When were you first diagnosed?
I was diagnosed in March of 2014.
Oh, so not too long ago, really. I mean, almost
no.
a year, but still, that's not
right.
long ago. What was when you first heard the diagnosis, what did you think?
Well, it was a terrible shock. You know, they told me my prognosis was I would be lucky to live 2 years.
Wow.
And that's still the prognosis, that I'd be lucky if I'm going to make it to March of 2016.
Okay. So that remains kind of the prognosis.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Does your family share your approach to this? It looked as though your family was well aware of what you were dealing with and were very supportive.
Correct. They are. My family is very supportive. You know, as to sharing the approach, I grew up with a predominantly Buddhist background.
Mm-hmm.
And the family that have seen the video, they think it's lovely, but that's where it stops short, because we don't really talk about death in that, my side of the family. And then with Ryan's family, my husband's side of the family, they think it's lovely, but they also believe that people need to maintain their choice to die by suicide if they're suffering. They think that's really important to be able to take their own life. They need to.
But your video isn't really a polemic against physician-assisted suicide. It's a witness to life, it seems to me.
Correct.
Which is actually, in my mind, more effective, I think, at least for a lot of people. It's more effective to see that you're flourishing and you're thriving in the midst of all this, that you're, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of dark times, but you are retaining your own spiritual and moral integrity as you go through this, and your family, your immediate family is there supporting you. It looked to me, in watching the video, that you made a choice not to create an argument, but to actually bear witness.
Correct. That's what we're trying to do, just to show that so many graces can come from trials and tribulations.
Yeah.
And you can suffer, but you can suffer with great joy.
Yeah.
And you can live life with happiness and joy, even though, like, my supposed timeline is 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, it has made me more grateful for every day and to appreciate every day. I am trying to live life more fully. I'm just not going to worry about the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's not here yet. I'm going to worry about today and live my life and give my life over every day to my kids, to my husband, to my neighbors. And that brings me profound joy.
My guest is Liz Lovett. She's a mother of four living with an inoperable kidney cancer, talking about how she's coping with this. Now, you mentioned that you're going to live every day. You're staying in the moment. So any fears that might present themselves, I imagine what you do is you push them aside?
I don't really push them aside.
Okay.
I just in the beginning when I was initially diagnosed, it was moments of great sadness, and there still are.
Yeah.
But what I have found that really helps is I just give it all over to our Lord. I said, I can't do this on my own. I need your help, you know, and that brings me so much peace. And I know so many graces just asking for help and completely relying on him.
Yeah. How old are the children?
I have a 7.5-year-old, a 5.5-year-old, an almost 4-year-old, and an almost 2-year-old.
That, my guess, is that it becomes most difficult looking at them.
It does. It does. But we try not to worry about the future. You know, we don't know how long God is going to keep me here. It could be decades.
Yeah,
now.
You never know. That's true.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
In fact,
and I just try and show them the love of God. That's how we're supposed to live, I'm trying to do.
We just came across a story this morning of a man who was in a locked-in condition, was really regarded as a vegetable, so to speak. And they were carting him off to harvest organs from him. And a relative kind of dug a fingernail into this person's toe area, and he gave a start. That's for 12 years he was in that condition. And he finally came out. He's married now. He just finished a book. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that would have been, they were ready to cart him off. They had written him off.
Right, yeah.
So you keep an open future, it sounds like.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
That's smart. That strikes me as smart.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, because even though the doctors say this is my timeline, I still have hope.
I
still have faith that miracles can happen to me.
Sure.
Need it.
And are you praying for a miracle?
Of course, yes.
Okay. If a miracle doesn't happen, does that change things?
No. No, because the graces that might come from my suffering, I might not see them.
Right.
But I believe they're for the greater good.
Yeah.
If my suffering gets my children to heaven, then that's my job as a mother, and I'm doing my job.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, is your commitment here and your ability to exhibit such grace under pressure, is that part of your natural temperament, or is it dictated by your faith?
Well, I would say my natural temperament is more of a doom and gloom kind of girl. It really is. I prepare for the worst in most cases. And it's only because my conversion and my faith and the graces that God has given me to go through this with great joy.
Liz, can you stay with me a little longer?
Sure.
Okay. We'll come back and continue conversation with Liz Love.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
In today's economy of buying and selling goods and services, we are all interested in what is best for us and our family. We want the best value for our hard-earned dollar. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. And during our clearance event, you can surely get the most for your money of any vehicle on the market and be treated with the dignity and respect you deserve. 6 acres loaded with new and certified pre-owned vehicles, great products, great service, great prices. Only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Don't worry. Be happy. Happy in the Lord, that is. Do you know that worrying is part of communicating, but it doesn't come from God? In Matthew, Jesus tells us, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. For you already have life and a body, and they are far more important than what you eat and wear." Jesus asks us, "Will all your worries add a single moment to your life?" Jesus came with a purpose, and he communicated to us that faith in God is how we are to live our lives. Don't cloud your mind with worry. Communicate a message of faith by having trust in the Lord that his will be done. Trust in your God-given ability and your God-given talent. Communicate first by listing all the things you're grateful for and stop talking about all the things you're worried about. Because faith in Him is one way we communicate our love to the Lord. This has been a Christ-Centered Communication Message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
In chapter 32 of Exodus, the people God led out of Egypt were worshiping an idol in the image of a golden calf. God wanted to consume them in His wrath and start a new family with Moses. But Moses implored the Lord, "Remember your servants and how you swore to them, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky." The Lord responded to Moses' prayer and relented in mercy. Psalm 103 explains, "As the heavens are high above the earth, so great is God's mercy toward those who fear Him." God's mercy was brought to the ancient Israelites through the intercessory prayer of Moses. Likewise, God calls us today to be intercessors for the church and for the whole world. We can be confident God hears these earnest prayers of our hearts, just as He heard the prayer of Moses. To learn about prayer and scripture, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan on Facebook or at cbsmich.org.
The Ave Maria Communication Field invites you to activate your faith. Healing the Father Wound is a two-day retreat in Redford featuring Father Pat Collins. The weekend will explore the nature and effects of the Father Wound through lectures, small groups, and prayer ministry. For further details, call 313-532-4394. All parents are invited to the Holy Spirit School Open House Sunday, January 25th in Brighton. Come and see the beautiful new building, meet the principal and teachers, and explore the curriculum. Call 810-231-9199, extension 1, for more information. You can find many more events and enter your own events at our website, AveMariaRadio.net. To become a member of the Guild, call 877-288-1077. Catholic Radio, it's yours to keep and to grow.
I'm Al Cresta. With me, Liz Lovett, mother of four. She was given a prognosis of 2 years. She has inoperable kidney cancer, and she's been learning to live in the face of that, trusting, of course, in God's overall providence and sovereignty. She's also created a blog called A Little Thing Called Hope. Is that it? A Little Thing Called Hope?
Yes, it is. A little thing called hope.com.
So people can get there and take a look. Do you keep it updated very often?
Not really. It's really, I've just started it for my friends and family. And, so I need to update it more often.
Okay. Were you raised as a Buddhist?
I was. My mother was Buddhist, and my father really had no religion. And I spent a lot of time in Taiwan. My mother's from Taiwan. In the summers, going to temples and praying with the monks. And I really identified with my mother's religion.
What kind of Buddhism was it? What school?
Well, it's really hard for me to try and pin it down. And I've tried with my husband several times because it's a type of Buddhism with a lot of cultural and ancestor worship, and so it's a little all over the place. So I have a really hard time, but I try and say Buddhism because that's the easiest for people to understand.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious. Your parents? You mentioned them earlier, and they're apparently glad to see you. Fighting back a bit here, but what would they have expected you to do?
Probably fight, just fight for my life because I feel like I'm a fighter in spirit. I have a military background. My father was in the military and I think they just expect me to fight until my last breath, which I will.
Yes. So if you had wanted to make the same plans that Brittany Maynard had made, would they have supported you in that?
I think they would have. I think they would have been sad. But I think if I said this is what I really want to do, I think they would have supported me.
How did you come to know Christ?
And it's through my husband. He directed me in a wonderful direction. I grew up Buddhist, and I never really had very many Catholic friends. And then my husband and I met. We became friends. He was going to be a seminarian at the time, and he slowly introduced me to this whole world of Catholics who profoundly deep believe in their faith and love their faith.
Yeah.
And they can go with me to a bar and have a beer and talk about, everything. And
sure.
That's what I've never experienced before, someone who can be completely traditional and love God and love everything about it, but can also relax and go play pool or, mm-hmm. Just have fun. And that's something I never experienced.
Yeah.
And so
how long have you been married now?
I've been married since 2005. I was mm-hmm. baptized Catholic in 2005, and then in October, I got married.
Yeah. And yeah. Did you find, were there any difficulties that you had, special difficulties you had to overcome because of your Buddhist upbringing?
There was. For me, believing in Jesus was the hardest thing. It was through Mary, and it was. I prayed to Mary initially because I just felt drawn to her. And,
really?
And I prayed, I really did, and I didn't know it, but a friend of mine, when I was very young, gave me a brown scapular to carry around. He said, take this with you, because she will protect you. And so I carried it in my wallet for 15 years.
Isn't that
And so when I started my conversion, I was going to RCIA, and I made a very good friend with a priest who was helping instruct me, and I had a lot of confusion and a lot of chaos in my mind of becoming Catholic, and I wanted to make sure that I was doing it for me, and I wasn't doing it because of my love for my husband.
Sure.
And we went to the cathedral in D.C., because that's where he was living at the time. And we were praying in front of an icon of Mary, and he was sitting off in one little area, and I was sitting off, and we were relatively close, but not, too close, and we were praying, and I just flat out, I said, okay, Mary, if this is something that I need to do, and I flat out asked, should I become Catholic? And at that moment, all of the chaos in my mind and in my heart ceased, and I got a very deep yes. And from that moment on, I knew I should become Catholic. And I start crying, and I'm overwhelmed with this feeling. And I look over at my husband, and he's crying too, and I don't know why. We're not talking to each other. And as we're leaving the cathedral, he asks, why were you crying? And I say, I can't tell you. You're going to think I'm nuts. I think I heard Mary speak to me. This is crazy, And so he kept prodding, and he said, why were you crying? And I said, I asked Mary if I should become Catholic, and she told me yes. And I firmly believe that I should become Catholic. And then I look at him, and I said, well, why were you crying? And he said, you're not going to believe me, but I asked Mary if you should become Catholic, and she said yes. We both knew.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's wonderful.
Yeah. And I say that's my conversion moment. That was it for me. I knew at that moment I needed to be baptized.
Yeah. What is the disease? What is it called?
I have stage four.
Stage four.
Mm-hmm. Papillary renal cell carcinoma.
Papillary.
A rare form of kidney cancer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Papillary renal cell carcinoma.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. And so there's no surgery that can just kind of snip this thing out.
Well, and when I was diagnosed in March, I did have a radical nephrectomy. They took out my kidney, my adrenal glands, some of my liver, and mm-hmm. a lot of my lymph nodes. They were hoping to catch it before it really spread through my lymph system.
Yes.
And so we didn't do any medication at that time. And then a while later in July, at the end of July, beginning of August, we found some of my lymph nodes were inflamed in my neck, shoulder, and my abdomen area. And for those, we are not going to go in and do surgery. I'm trying a therapy. Regular, when you see my video, I don't look like the typical cancer patient on chemo.
Right,
I still have my hair. Right. But it's because with my type of cancer, the normal chemo that you see most cancer patients go through does not work for my cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's no reason for me to do it because it just won't work.
It won't work
so I'm trying a different type of therapy that so far is working.
Good.
And it's so far. I'm just thankful that so far it's working. But they were kind of, they said that it might not work, and my doctor actually put in there that he didn't think this medicine was going to work for me.
Okay.
In my notes, and it is.
Okay, good. Well, listen, Liz, as long as you're willing to talk publicly about these matters, we'd like to check in with you again, in a few months.
That's
maybe.
Great.
And just have you share with us your journey. And wonderful talking with you. Wonderful making your acquaintance, even if only by the phone.
Thank you so much.
And
how
do people stay in touch and know what you're doing? They get us the blog again.
Yeah, the blog is www.alittlethingcalledhope.com.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Liz Lovett, again, suffering with stage 4 papillary renal cell carcinoma. Doctors say they can't operate on it right now. And her blog is alittlethingcalledhope.com. I just learned that we did place Liz's video over at our website as well. If you go to avimariaradio.net, just in the upper left, go to our YouTube page, and we'll have her video there as well. So, and we'll stay in touch. We'll stay in touch with her, see how things work out. Because this is where the rubber meets the road. I think all of us know that implicitly. That when it's fairly easy to affirm one's discipleship when life is going swimmingly, and it's a beautiful spring day, right? The breeze is blowing, and you're out of school, you've got a vacation coming, the kids are doing exceptionally well, and we're full of joy and gratitude, and happily, that gratitude often is just turned towards God. I think it's almost there's an impulse in the human spirit that makes you want to thank God when things go well. Of course, that changes a lot when we're in suffering. I know one of the most interesting moments in my own life is when I was rushed to the hospital with necrotizing fasciitis and had to undergo surgery for the removal of my left leg. And I remember I had great support from pastors, my own pastor, a friend of mine who was a pastor, Father John Ricardo, was with me. My staff was strongly supportive. My wife, the church, people turned out in droves to pray for me. I had all, it couldn't have gone better in terms of support. And so I was hoping that the Lord would give me everything I needed to endure the suffering. And I think I did surprisingly well because of the prayers of God's people. But I never learned. This is the thing that was most surprising, that I didn't suffer very well. In other words, I didn't find myself able to, in the midst of all the pain and suffering, to be kind of always offering up the suffering. At that time, we were going to war in Iraq, and so I was offering up sufferings for, that we may not have to go into battle. But here's the thing that got me about this. Sometimes it's not a matter of how well you do it, it's a matter that you try it all. And another thing I learned too is that discouragement is never from God. Disappointments are inevitable, but discouragement is never from God, because discouragement will block out all the bright rays of hope and grace that can come to you. So most of my time was battling against discouragement. The problem with pain is that it's intrusive. It breaks your attention. You'll be there praying, and you're doing going along fine, and bang, you get this shot of pain, and all of a sudden, you forgot where the heck you were. I mean, you're just having to stay remembering why you're doing this. You've got to start over again. But one thing I can say with great certainty about this, and that's one reason I want to continue to talk with Liz as she goes through it. When I emerged from surgery, I was unconscious for 4 or 5 days. When I emerged from surgery, had learned that I lost my leg, I was given an extraordinary grace because I did sense that the prayers of God's people were lifting me up. I was buoyed up because of your prayers, those of you who were with me at the time when that happened. And I'm more convinced today than ever before that there is grace in the midst of suffering, but we don't know about it until we're in the midst of it.
A federal judge in Philadelphia recently ruled in one of our free speech cases that an expert hired by the government could not testify that an advertisement claiming that the Quran promotes hatred towards Jews was false and therefore beyond the protection of the First Amendment. The judge properly rejected the government's argument that it could ban the advertisement, holding that the First Amendment does not permit government officials to be the arbiters of truth regarding matters of public opinion. As the judge noted, speech concerning public issues has always rested on the highest rung of the hierarchy of First Amendment values. As such, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in matters of opinion. Indeed, political speech does not lose First Amendment protection simply because the listener believes that it is false or disagrees with the message it advances. Thus, allowing the government to restrict political speech based on an assessment that it is false or inaccurate offends bedrock First Amendment principles. In the final analysis, this ruling was a clear victory for the First Amendment because it would be perilous to permit government censors to be the arbiters of truth regarding politics, history, religion, or other similar matters of opinion. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website, liking us on Facebook, and following us on Twitter.
Are you looking for a Catholic school where students live a shared experience of faith in God and the teachings of Jesus Christ? Our Lady of Sorrows Catholic School in Farmington is the place for you. We offer preschool through 8th grade classes integrating strong academies with active expressions of faith. We participate in daily prayer, weekly mass, special devotions, and numerous community service programs. Come join us at our open house, Sunday, January 25th from 1 to 3 p.m. and see what Our Lady of Sorrows is all about.
The pro-life and the pro-death camps were both rocked last November when Abby Johnson, the director of the Planned Parenthood Clinic in College Station, Texas, resigned after watching an abortion on an ultrasound screen.
And my supervisor said, "You know, Abby, you've really got to get your priorities straight. Abortion needs to be your priority because that's where our money is."
Abby Johnson took a journey from Planned Parenthood to pro-life.
I was thinking about all of the women that I had lied to. What if they had known the truth? It's not just some tissue. It is a baby.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Following the March for Life, we'll have an interview with Abby Johnson and a very recent talk by John and Mary Lockwood, who experienced the power of God's forgiveness following abortions. Listen to Putting on the Mind of Christ this and every Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. Starting today, Priests for Life is conducting a prayer novena in preparation for January 22nd, the sad observance of the Roe v. Wade decision that legalized child killing in the United States throughout pregnancy. This prayer, which you can find at priestsforlife.org, asks the grace of mercy and conversion upon our nation, that the killing may cease, and that those who have been involved in abortion may find healing. We need to be spiritually prepared for January 22nd. Many preparations are being made for marches, parish activities, and other events to commemorate this day. Let's prepare spiritually as well. Go to priestsforlife.org to sign up for the novena and download the prayer. The bishops have designated January 22nd as a day of penance. Let us prepare well for it by this novena. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Coming up, of course, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, thousands of pro-lifers will be in Washington, D.C., and, of course, around the country, millions will be wondering what they can do to up their commitment to the unborn, what they can do to change a pro-abortion culture. And there are many ways to do this. I sometimes forget to remind us all that there are many spokes on the pro-life wheel. And I, you know, we often forget organizations like Right to Life of Michigan, which is at work every single day working on legislation and monitoring what's going on there. We don't talk very much about the direct action of rescue anymore because it hasn't been happening that much. We do talk about crisis pregnancy centers and sidewalk counseling every once in a while because of Guadalupe Partners. But we have been talking quite a bit about other types of direct action with Dr. Monica Miller and also Lynn Mills, who's one of our veteran pro-life leaders in this area. I met Lynn many years ago when I read an article in either the Free Press or the News about her sitting in the lobby of an abortion clinic. I don't know if they arrested you that day, but they had a tough time getting you out.
There was no arrest that day until my first arrest came in St. Louis.
Eighty-five.
Yeah, you never forget your first arrest. But you know what? It's liberating, too.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago at the Lathrop Village Mill, they threatened to arrest me because one tote touched the property.
Yeah.
I was with my son.
Yeah.
I tossed. Yeah. I tossed him the keys and said, let's go. Here. And they backed down.
Yeah.
So not being afraid to get arrested works out really well.
Yeah. It is it's a very, very strange relationship between clinic owners and pro-life people who come to pray or come to rescue or counsel. You've been doing something a little different, though, than all those things.
Right.
And that's what I wanted to talk about, because this is unusual. And let's talk about one instance of this. You got a phone call December 9th of last year.
Yes.
By a woman whose name is Jess.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. What did Jess tell you?
She told me, and she started out, and I had no idea where, but that she had had a second trimester abortion and how horrible it was. We put one thing led to another.
Do you know how she got your name?
She found it in a blog.
Okay.
From Life Dynamics connected.
Okay.
And because Jess is so tenacious about nobody having to go through this again if she can help it, she was doing her research, and this was attached to a blog with the Summit Abortion Mill and Reginald Sharp in Detroit.
Okay.
And somebody was complaining about what happened to them, and I posted the link to the LARA, Licensing and Regulatory Affairs website, and I said, file a complaint.
Okay, so she had complaints about her experience getting a second trimester abortion.
Right, and how they botched it and what happened and that.
And what did happen?
Her uterus was perforated, blood went everywhere, she sat up, and when she sat up because of the pain, she saw the bucket that was right next to her with her baby in it. And this has changed her forever. And
hard
you know,
to hear.
Please pray for Jess.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a beautiful person. We got together on Saturday night, spent about 3.5-4.5 hours together. And this has just changed her forever.
Well, she was raised thinking that this is just this is the American way
another
of life.
I mean,
Planned Parenthood, and you know, you have this choice. You might as well exercise it if you get in an awkward situation.
Right. She grew up in a Planned Parenthood mentality.
Yeah.
And I asked her the other day, do you think you would have done this if there was not a Planned Parenthood mentality in your household? And she said she doesn't think so.
Yeah. Okay, so she's bleeding. So there's been injury.
Right.
She's been traumatized because she ends up seeing her second trimester baby.
Yes.
What does the abortionist do at that point? I mean, obviously, this has got to go to the hospital, right?
Not obviously.
No?
No.
Okay.
Well, you know, there was some talk, and then she told me just a couple days ago that they had considered letting her husband take her instead of calling 911.
With that much hemorrhaging?
Yeah. And I've seen this happen before with Enrique Gerby and distracting the sidewalk counselors out front so they could put the woman into the abortionist's car. This is not unusual. They tried at Woman's Center of Southfield according to Jess, this is, you know, what I've been told, calling a, well, no, this is in the documents too, calling a private ambulance service. But they were busy, so they had to hang up with them and call the regular 911. This is how they hide so many things.
Because if they leave the premises, then the argument can be made that the injury was aggravated after they left?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Perhaps considered abandoning the patient
right.
if you don't put, you know, the woman into proper medical
right.
care.
That's what I'm thinking. Is that?
And to make things worse, where Lathrop Village is, Providence Hospital is just a couple miles away.
For those who are outside the Southeast Michigan area, this is right within the greater Detroit, in suburban Detroit area. These clinics are, how many clinics are there in the area now?
We're down to about 22,
yeah.
maybe. I mean, I'm talking the whole state. They're closing at such a rapid rate.
They are, yeah. Okay, so did she? So they called 911. Did they get an ambulance?
Yes.
Okay.
And this has been documented in the state report that they wanted, because there were a few people in the lobby, they wanted to take her outside and down the side door,
mm-hmm.
not past the other patients out there.
Okay.
And they took her to Botsford Hospital.
Okay.
They like doubled the distance.
So was Providence nearby?
Yeah.
Okay.
Providence is with, if they're
at, so it was easier to get to Providence, which is a Catholic hospital.
Yes. Yes. But, and I do not think the Catholic hospital would have treated her any different from a non-Catholic
okay.
hospital.
Why do you think they avoided it then?
My guess would be perhaps he's already sent too many patients there.
Okay.
And red flags would go up.
Right, right. Okay, now, so she lives, obviously, right?
Yes.
I mean, so she endures this. The records, the anesthesia records state that anesthesia was given by Dr. Sharp, no mention of IV having been started. Did they give her, you know, something like Ativan to calm her down? Or
no,
did she have a local anesthetic? Did they use Demerol for pain?
No, she said she was given nothing. That's what the records state. But she says she was given absolutely nothing. And with some more research, Reginald Sharp had 11 pending pharmacy licenses. They've all disappeared. I've done my best.
What do you mean, 11 pending pharmacy licenses?
For going and being part of Kalo's five.
Kalo is another abortionist that
right.
Sharp works for.
Right. Well, okay. used to work for.
Okay.
And then he was going to be working up in, Kalamazoo, Saginaw and Flint. And all of those pending licenses have disappeared. I keep...
These were his attempts to write prescriptions? To get the authority to write prescriptions?
You have a Controlled Substance 3 license that you have to hold and a Drug Control Location license
okay.
that you need for every location that you're
gotcha.
At
gotcha. Okay.
to administer, gotcha. Dispense.
Okay, so he needs one for every location.
Right.
right.
And
right.
suddenly, they've disappeared. Under FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, we have found that twice at the clinic he's at now, the Summit in Detroit, he's withdrawn his CS or his drug control location license for there.
Wow.
Worse,
why is that?
The state won't answer.
See, this is the point in terms of pro-life work. This is another way of dealing with it. There is a lot of slop,
yes.
a lot of disregard for regulations, a lot of low budget activity that goes on in these clinics because they don't have to meet certain high state standards for medical facilities.
Yes.
And Lynn is one person, and there are others who do this too, who take a look at the medical histories. They sometimes are, in this case, she got a call from a woman who had just had a second trimester abortion there. And so you got a chance to see her medical records.
Right.
And this, so then let me say then, this ends up in the hands of the state? Or how did you get the state involved with this? Or did somebody else get the state involved in it?
I had been getting the surveys from all of the abortion clinics in the area. Specifically, the one in Lathrop Village was one of the four in the state that were licensed as an outpatient surgical facility before the law went into effect a little over 2 years ago. So what was going on there was just their annual inspection. And now that I'm thinking about it, I've got to find out if they were inspected in 2012 and 2013.
What the history is there, yeah.
So when you see that they failed one and that in 60 days they're going to be reinspected, you FOIA.
Yes,
you get
Freedom
that.
Of Information Act, and you can get this information.
Right, and everybody for every state, every location, it works a little bit different. I suggest you just get on the phone and start calling, sending emails, and they're usually helpful.
So now, you learned that the state had that they had failed the state inspection.
Right.
How many times had they failed?
Five times.
How many strikes and you're out here?
I mean, that's what I kept asking the state. You know, how many times does he get to fail? And there was one inspection I didn't know about, so I didn't know to ask about it. Here's the cool thing. With 40 Days for Life out there, I got a phone call that day saying, hey, state inspectors were here for over 4 hours. So I had that date. You've got to phrase things like any and all inspections, you know, for the year 2013, 2014. And so I kept communicating with the state. And at one point they said, the report's not ready, but we have a few more patients to interview. And that, another red flag just went off.
Lynn, we've got about 60 seconds.
Yes.
How can people stay in touch with you about this kind of thing, or do you have to do this just on your own?
They can email me simply at prolifedetroit@aol.com.
ProLifeDetroit
at
AOL.com. And are you waiting now for the state's determination on the licenses of these guys?
March 4th, the Attorney General is having a hearing up in Lansing.
Okay.
And I'm going to be there. Other people, they're going to have witnesses. I imagine the state inspectors and other people.
Okay, so that's March 4th, 2015.
Yep.
They're going to be examining these licenses.
Right, right. I'm sure Kalo will be there
with
his attorneys trying to fight it. But they are trying to permanently take this license away, and I want his other four clinics.
Okay, this is another way of fighting.
Right, and it works.
Okay, ProLife Detroit at AOL.com.
Right.
Lynn, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Who's ahead of your home and family? Is it Jesus Christ? Call the Men of Sacred Hearts to show you how to place Jesus as the head of your family and show you how to use the Holy Rosary to learn what is on your child's heart that they're not telling you. Watch one mom's testimonial on our webpage, menofthesacredhearts.org, and call us to set up your appointment today, 586-264-8550. This message is brought to you by Office Express. Let's all support each other. OEXUSA.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
Beautiful Michigan road trips can be adventurous in the snow, but with the all-new, completely redesigned Jeep Cherokee midsize SUV, 4x2 or 4x4, you can be confident you are driving the roads in safety and enjoy the adventure. 10 airbags, up to 35 miles per gallon, and loaded with safety features, this all-new Jeep Cherokee is so fun to drive. You'll want to go on errands around town just to drive it. Experience the difference at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Evers Collegiate High School and Academy is North Oakland County's leading Catholic school, offering a gender-specific education on a co-ed campus for students in preschool through 12th grade. At Evers, you'll find rigorous academics, an emphasis on strong character and faith formation, and a wide variety of athletic and extracurricular activities. Explore Evers at their open house on January 25th. Learn more at everscatholic.org. Future leaders welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. I just finished up my interview with Lynn Mills, but as we were leaving and saying goodbye, she pointed something out that I thought I should have asked this question. How effective, Lynn, how effective is this strategy?
It is so effective. Five abortionists in the state of Michigan quit by the end of 2014.
Because they didn't want to meet the state inspection standards, or because insurance rates went up? What happened?
Strategies exposing them. There's still a stigma associated with abortion. And one of them, Michael Roth, had four addresses during the last 6 months of 2014 because nobody wanted to have an abortionist in their building. And then with Kalo,
it's interesting, isn't it, that landlords are uncomfortable with this.
Right, unless you've been there for like 30 years. But there was, pro-lifers discovered two other abortionists, one working for Northland Family Planning, another working for Abortionist Kalo, and all they had to do was give state documents to their partners. And it's a fancy office in West Bloomfield. These two guys quit. They did not want to be associated. And part of the documents that are sent out are the surveys that they fail. And when you fail a survey and it goes into detail, it lets you know what kind of person you are.
Yeah, that you're under substandard.
Right.
You're not on top of things.
Right.
The state has to fail you five times. Do you want to be in business with a person like that who can bring all kinds of suits upon you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so five have decided they don't want the stigma. They don't want the legal hassle.
Right.
They don't want to spend the money on upgrading the practice.
And they're not even giving out information on where to go to get them.
Yeah.
And many people have called there asking for a reference, and the answer is go to your own doctor for a reference. We don't have any place for you to go. And all three of these guys had rescues at their clinics back in the day.
Ago.
Yeah.
Lynn, thank you so much again.
Thank you, Al, for
keep
the
me informed. Let me know how things are going.
Okay, thank you, Al.
Thanks. Lynn Mills, Pro-Life Detroit at AOL.com. Coming up in the next hour, Steve Grudanis will be joining us looking at the world of film for 2014, the best and the worst films of 2014. Also, Raymond Ibrahim will be joining us. The mainstream press continues to treat attacks by ISIS and Boko Haram and other terrorist groups as though they're isolated, independent events. In reality, they are all rooted in the same radical interpretation of Islam, and Raymond will talk about that ideology and what unites these terrorist groups from Indonesia to Pakistan to Nigeria to Israel. More coming up.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Dunha-Garmo, co-publisher and editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. It's a news magazine for the Chaldean community, about the Chaldean community, and for anyone who wants to engage the Chaldean community. As Christians from Iraq, Chaldeans are proud supporters of Ave Maria Catholic Radio. We invest many hours into this monthly news magazine to keep you invested in the community. You can subscribe or advertise today. Contact us at www.chaldeannews.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Cardinal Walter Kasper created an international media stir when he proposed allowing divorced and civilly remarried Catholics to receive the sacraments after a penitential period. In response, Ignatius Press has published The Gospel of the Family, a book with a foreword by Cardinal George Pell of Melbourne. The Gospel of the Family sorts the helpful from the problematic in Cardinal Kasper's proposal. It's an essential guide to one of the most important debates in the Church today. Order at 800-651-1531, Ignatius.com, or your Catholic bookstore.
Here's a Family Minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
What do you do when a child denies wrongdoing? As you recall yesterday, and you were listening in, weren't you? We said that kids routinely will at least try to deny they were anywhere near the solar system when the wrongdoing